Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power, the greatest football partnership since Jeff and Heskey.
All right, you're welcome along to the Classic Game Club. Nathan with you this time around as we go all the way back to April 1988 and a match that saw Liverpool produce what was described as one of the greatest performances of all time by any club team as they beat Nottingham Forest by 5-0 in the old First Division. Joining me on this episode of the Classic Game Club is Phil Egan. How are you keeping?
Very well. How are you doing?
Very well. And Stephen Doyle, who is, as always, looking resplendent and got a nice little collection of jerseys and scarves in the background.
Yeah, go for the hipster man cave look here, Nathan. So I hope it takes everybody's eye off the crappy wall I have behind me, but there you go.
So we all spent last night watching back this game. For context then, this match from a personal point of view, I had this game on VHS when I was about 9-10 years of age. And growing up in the west of Ireland, there weren't too many TV channels, so I probably watched this game about 50 times, but hadn't watched it, I'd say, in 25 years. So I obviously had this nostalgic sense of what I thought it was, and then watching it back last night, the reality of what it actually was. Like, one of the things I thought about this game in my head was that Ronnie Whelan ran the show in the middle of midfield. And then I watched the match back and it turned out Ronnie Whelan wasn't even playing. And it turned out Nigel Spackman was the man very much running the show in the middle of midfield. So this is a game I think that stands out for a lot of people. We get to some of the reaction that we already got online from people who were also watching it back, because I think it's a game that a lot of people remember because it was live on the television as well on a Wednesday night at 7:30 as Liverpool were closing in to the title. There's a lot of similarities with what has happened this season, not just probably when we get into the game and the style of football. Liverpool had started the season 30 games unbeaten. They were very much closing in on the title. It was just a matter of time. And they had this great rivalry. It was Kenny Dalglish against Brian Clough. It was the third time they'd met each other in a matter of weeks. Forest had won a league match at the City Ground. Just 4 days earlier, Liverpool had beaten Nottingham Forest in the 1988 FA Cup semi-final. And this was a clash, not really of two teams going for the title, because Liverpool were well ahead, but Forest were a quality outfit. And they were absolutely ripped apart in this game. And Liverpool went on to win the title just a matter of weeks later. The Liverpool team, I'll run through first. Grobbelaar and Gold, a back four of Nicol, Hansen, Gillespie and Ablett. In midfield, Houghton, McMahon, Spackman and Barnes, and then Aldridge and Beardsley up front. Not a bad old starting 11 that Kenny Dalglish had to work with there, Phil.
No, and you mentioned the game that they lost at the City Ground. He actually left Houghton and Beardsley out for that one, and he brought them on. But this was the same 11 that he went for that Cup semi-final, which they'd won the previous weekend. And I think one thing that was very notable from early on is the energy that Liverpool played with. There is a lot of similarities in watching this 88 team to the current crop in terms of the work ethic. Ray Houghton and Peter Beardsley put in a serious shift. Ray Houghton, in particular, at one stage in the second half of this game, Nigel Clough has a chance, and it's Ray Houghton who kind of gets there and puts him off. I think Clough was looking for a penalty, but that was what was expected with the team. And at certain spells during the game, especially when Liverpool score in this game, then they just look like they can go to another whole new level. And that is similar to Klopp's team, where when they score one, you think they could score a few more.
Yeah, Steve-O, what were your initial thoughts on watching it?
Well, interesting enough, I found, I'm going to get all stato nerd on you here, but on the Liverpool site, they have all the great detail and all the past games and stuff. But the average age, I should say, of that Nottingham Forest team was 22, was just under 23, 22.82. And the average age of the Liverpool team was just 27.4, so just over 27. And I think as the match wore on, the differences between the average ages in those teams kind of showed. That Forest team was being rebuilt at the time by Brian Clough. But, they really had some good players there. And while Liverpool are lauded for putting on one of the great performances of the century, that Forest team weren't bad either. And there was flashes of the likes of young Gary Crosby, Nigel Clough, Wilson in midfield as well. I thought were all very good. But I just thought it was definitely worth noting the difference between the average age, because that Liverpool team really was, you know, either at its peak or just coming to its peak.
Yeah, it was a sensational Liverpool team, and it finished 5-0 at a time, I think, when maybe 5-0 wasn't that regular a result. Goals weren't quite as plentiful, but it could have been 8 or 9. Like, the Forest goalkeeper was probably man of the match.
Well, Motson actually says in his commentary, doesn't he, towards the end, he notes that the Kop are starting to sing, "We want five, we want five." And Motson says, you know, this Liverpool team, it's been noted that they haven't scored more than 4 goals this season, as if it was a kind of a, you know, something that should be noted, which I kind of thought, well, you know, scoring 5 goals in a match, it's not actually really a regular thing, is it?
No. The other thing, I guess, that made it this performance and this Liverpool team probably slightly different was that there was such a great Irish influence. So while Ronnie Whelan wasn't playing, he was still at the club. Mark Lawrenson had started the season and unfortunately was forced into retirement. But it was just so brilliant to watch Ray Houghton and John Aldridge. One of the great club teams and two Irish players so pivotal to it.
Yeah, and obviously we knew a few months later what they would go on to do in the Ireland team against players that would have been playing in the same team as them. Steve McMahon, obviously, playing in the Liverpool team. John Barnes, Peter Beardsley. Aldridge works his socks off in this game. You know, a lot of the time he's chasing down lost causes because Beardsley is playing in a more withdrawn role and Aldridge, obviously, the focal point. Ray Houghton, as I said, just buzzing around for the whole game, scores a really good goal. And, you know, that was, Aldridge was up near 30 goals by the end of this game. And he had this great record against Forest in this little mini-series of 3 games in the space of 11 days.
Yeah, he scored 5 goals over the space of the 3 games in 11 days. Just the other bit of context then probably is that as brilliant as Liverpool were that season and obviously didn't complete the double, they were in the midst of a mini-dip. This was their one dip of the season heading into this. So they only lost 2 matches all season in the league and they'd come in the previous 4 games against Everton and against Nottingham Forest. They'd drawn 3-3 against Manchester United in their previous league match, having been 3-1 up and absolutely cruising. So it'd be interesting to find the commentary around it in the days leading up as to, is it like now where, I've only built them up, has been the greatest thing since sliced bread, but really there's a lot of flaws in this side. But anything, and you just have to listen to John Motson's commentary, like he's just sitting there luxuriating in what he's watching, considering he'd seen it all and done it all, even at that stage, Motson. Like at one stage, he's just like, you just have to sit back and enjoy this.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out as well, like that it definitely was a BBC broadcast that game, was it? Because I just know at the end of the YouTube footage, it's like it's a video production. They've obviously produced this video of the match. And I wasn't sure if Motson had kind of done the commentary afterwards, if it'd been, because I know ITV were showing matches every Sunday, so I just wasn't, it definitely was a BBC production, was it, that game?
That's a very good question. So what you're suggesting is that Motson commentated after the fact?
Yeah, it may have been live on BBC, I'm just not sure. All I can remember from being a kid at that stage, like I was only, I think I was 8 years of age when that game was on, but I just remember ITV used to do the big match on Sundays live with, I can't remember who the commentators were now. Brian Moore, of course, yeah, sorry. And I just wasn't too sure whether, there's a good chance maybe BBC were showing the matches midweek at that stage, because it was, of course, a Wednesday night game, so.
Yeah, all right, let's get on to some of some parts of the game, as we always do here in the Classic Game Club. First up, the secret man of the match. From watching it back, who you thought the man of the match was, Phil?
Okay, it's a toss-up for me between Beardsley or Barnes. Obviously, Beardsley scores, but without Barnes, he doesn't score. I think Barnes was unbelievable. He was one of those players growing up where he just made the game look so easy. Obviously, as he got older, then he slotted into the centre midfield. But for his physique, at times he looked languid and lazy, but he just, there was moments in this game where he just strolls by players as if they're cones in a training session, and he was unbelievable. Even the first goal, Ray Houghton's goal, if you look at the ball, is absolutely pinged in at Barnes and one touch and into the feet of Ray Houghton, who finishes it off. So I think I'm going to go with Barnes. I'm going to go with Barnes ahead of Beardsley.
Steve-O?
Well, I knew you two boys would be the glory hunters going for the attacking, striking players, showing all the flair in the goals. So, like my old pal Gary Breen, I'm going to start looking at the defenders. I thought Steve Nicol played a brilliant game. And like I have memory of when I was younger, watching Steve Nicol. I know he played centre half a bit as well. I just couldn't. It was the first time I could, you know, saw an old Liverpool match, him playing as an out and out right back, and I thought he was excellent getting forward at times. But I'm going to go for Alan Hansen. I thought there was a couple of stages. Remember, Nigel Clough had that chance in the first couple of minutes, and it was all. I just thought the defending in that particular moment was all down to Hansen's control. In that, like he dominated that Liverpool box. Bruce Grobbelaar was there to tidy up anything that got through, maybe. And we all know Grobbelaar wasn't the greatest keeper that Liverpool ever had. But I just thought Alan Hansen owned that box. And as well, there was a couple of times Hansen got forward. My God, as they say, great free for a big man. He was absolutely brilliant getting forward as well. And this thing of Sheffield United, as we know them now, with their overlapping centre-backs, well, Jamie Mack, Alan Hansen was doing it a good 20-odd years beforehand. I thought he was brilliant. I thought the fact that Liverpool kept that clean sheet was mainly down to Hansen.
It's interesting you mentioned the age profile of that Forest team, because it did look like men against boys once Liverpool got that first goal. Like, this was a Liverpool side very sure in themselves of how strong they were, both physically and mentally, and they were like a cat just messing about with a mouse. Like, they knew they had this Nottingham Forest team, and that physically Forest weren't going to be able to match them all through the park. And I was probably similar to you, Phil, in that Barnes or Beardsley, and in a way, looking back, if you were to blank out everything that's gone on since, it's hard to ignore Peter Beardsley and all that has gone on with the racism side of things over the last little while, and not look at Beardsley differently. But there's just the sheer speed and agility, and his ability to just turn past the defender and skip past the defender again and again and again. I thought the two central midfielders for Liverpool were outstanding. Oh, like McMahon, the way, like, it's very much the Souness Giles model of what they want a midfielder to be. Every time they got it, there were no simple balls. Even though this was a game, and maybe this will be the most jarring thing about the back passes, like, Liverpool rarely passed the ball back to Grobbelaar during the game. Like, when McMahon or Spackman got the ball in the middle midfield, their first inclination was to turn the midfielder near them, put the head down, and gain 20, 25 yards. And again, I remember talking to Graeme Souness at a show we did recently, and he was getting a little bit nostalgic and talking about Trent Alexander-Arnold, and we were talking about where he fits into the all-time Liverpool great 11s, and he was talking about Phil Neal and Steve Nicol. He's like, you know, people think that these players stayed inside their own half, and then 5 minutes into this, you see Steve Nicol bobbing up that right wing just like Alexander-Arnold would right now. Like, that was probably the most striking thing, was how similar they were. I think I would go with Beardsley as man of the match. I thought, like, Barnes, you sort of expect that from Barnes. Like, it was so, like, his close control, as you say, some of the balls that were absolutely pinged to him. He was getting kicked up and down, and you could see as well how tough he was. There was that incident in the very final minute where Forrest are on the attack, and Barnes comes back and absolutely clatters the Forrest player on the edge of his own area. Like, he had that strength and just the touch, the awareness, the ability. Like, he was on a different level, I think, overall to everybody on the pitch that day, but Beardsley was the one. His energy seemed to be the difference in terms of just sparking Liverpool in and around that final third. So I don't know if we have an agreement there, but it was hard. It's one of those games, hard to pick a man of the match.
Well, and you know, I think who deserves a bit of attention here as well is Steve Sutton, because I think Forrest could have lost that game 7-8-0. Steve Sutton actually pulled off some brilliant saves for Nottingham Forest. I thought he was really good. Like, you know, you couldn't really have a go at him for any of the goals that he conceded, but I think the saves that he made should definitely be acknowledged. I thought he was really good.
Yeah, again, it just shows the gulf in class that was there, that the Forest keeper, despite letting in five, was probably their best player on the pitch. In terms of moment of the match, Stephen?
I'm actually going to go for John Barnes. I thought I had it written down here. It was the second goal, and Barnes basically won possession to start that move, and it was down kind of around the left back position. I can't remember who he won possession off again, but he just clattered to somebody and then released Beardsley to set up John Aldridge for that second goal. And I just thought that really, it kind of put down a mark, although they were 1-0 up and it was a brilliant finish from Ray Houghton for that first goal. I just thought that Barnes's tackle and the pass just kind of set the tone for the rest of the game then, because Motson does allude to it, refers to quite a bit, Liverpool's work rate, not just the players at the back, but how the attacking players where, you know, had a great work rate in getting back and helping out with the defence. I just thought that that moment of Barnes clattering the Forest player, winning back the ball, and then setting up the second goal was just phenomenal.
Yeah, I think I'd go for that second goal as well. Probably just a slightly different part of it, which was Beardsley's ball. Like, pretty much a no-look pass. This was, I think I saw someone comparing it to Kaká in the 2005 Champions League final. Like, the way he was able to bend it around the defence and the touch then and the finish to match. But it was just the vision of Beardsley. Like, it was a perfect, perfect team goal. But there were so many perfect goals. Like, Houghton's goal, the finish for Houghton's goal, reminded me in a way of almost Michael Thomas a year later for Arsenal. Like, very similar to the way he just glides past the tackle and a lovely little dinked finish. I thought that was brilliant, but and also obviously Barnes for Beardsley's goal, where there's a little nutmeg and like just the way he glides then past the second challenge. And all of those Liverpool players played with their heads up all the time. Like, Barnes was always going to pick out the right pass. Like, there were so many, like, there was, we keep talking about Steve Sutton, there was five or six more efforts that if they'd gone in, would have been the moment of the match and would have been the goal of the game in a game of exceptional goals. Only they were denied by the post or they were denied by the brilliance of the Forest goalkeeper. But I think Beardsley's ball for the second goal was probably my moment of the match.
You kind of touched on my moment of the match there with Barnes for the Beardsley goal, because it's late in the game. He's in the corner. He's been stood up by Steve Chettle. Actually, another thing that you noticed watching the game was quite tall fullbacks for Forrest, Chettle and Stuart Pearce, and even Liverpool at Gary Ablett and Steve Nicholls. So how the game has changed. But the fact that he has Chettle there, you kind of know what he's going to try, but he still does it and puts the ball through. And you see the cop, you see the excitement on the Liverpool supporters' faces when Barnes puts the ball through Chettle's legs. Then another tackle comes in, he gets away from that, and then has the presence of mind to put it on a plate for Beardsley. So that for me was the moment of the match. And I know you could say at that stage the game was wrapped up, but that was just the champagne moment.
In terms of...
I thought that young boy, Darren Wassell, coming on in the second half as well for Des Walker, that was a pretty crucial turn in the game, because we all know how much of a class defender Des Walker was for Nottingham Forest. But that young man, Darren Wassell, came on. He's only 19 years of age. Imagine being 19 and being thrown to the wolves like that at Anfield. And I actually just did a bit of reading up on him since. Darren Wassell is actually now the head of the Derby County Academy, would you believe? So there's a little bit of trivia if you're on the side.
There's still a Clough connection then in some way.
Yeah.
One of the tweets we got in was from Justin Mason. If I can get it up on my phone here, who said, remember watching this on Sports Night on the BBC that night. I was 10 going on 11. Love this team. Barnes, Beardsley and Aldridge. Was our third game against them in 10 days. 2 undefeated at the City Ground on Easter Saturday. 2-1 victory at Hillsborough, which he said was the day of his grandfather's funeral, unfortunately. But he remembers going in to watch it afterwards. Love that Liverpool side. A lot of people getting in touch last night just with their memories of that Liverpool team. In terms of trending then from this era as to what stood out, like, for me what stood out was actually that it didn't seem of that era. Like, on the Classic Games Club, quite often you go back, and we did the 1990 All-Ireland football final between Cork and Meath a couple of weeks back, and it felt like a different sport. Like, the thing that stood out for me was how similar this Liverpool side were to this current Liverpool side, or any of the great Premier League teams, in that they were so high energy, pressed high, never gave anybody a second on the ball, and out-and-out attack. They aim whatever way possible, much like this Liverpool side now, where they can go long and they'll try and throw the ball up at the back and not let defences out. Like, you saw even Barnes would get the ball sometimes inside his own half, and he just hoof it forward because they know they try and win that second ball and just sweeping forward again and again. Like, there was obvious things like the jerseys were a little bit looser, but even those Liverpool players, like Barnes was, like, for his day, what an athlete.
The shorts were a bit ropey at times. They're quite, you know, you wouldn't want to be attempting a slide tackle in those shorts because you wouldn't know where they'd end up. But I think even watching the game, I thought to myself how much, like, as good as they were, they could have been even better if that pitch was the carpet it is now. And Anfield has always been regarded as one of the better pitches throughout the years. And it was even back in 1988. But the current pitch now, which, imagine what that 88 team would do playing on a carpet.
I have to say, just speaking of the pitch as well, and on the trending thing, I just noticed Steve Sutton, at one point he was taking a goal kick, and he did the old, you know, digging the toe into the turf. And you never see goalkeepers doing that anymore. Like, I remember even as a kid, I used to stick your toe into the pitch, just try and make a little mound. But of course, you know, see, goalkeepers don't have to do that nowadays. Just on the trending thing, I actually thought the slim fitting kits, I thought, you know, absolutely bang on. They looked amazing. The mullets, there was a lot of mullets going around. Ray Houghton, Steve McMahon, even the referee had a magnificent looking mullet, I have to say. I thought he looked, you know, the referees back then, you would have thought would be a bit more old school with their back and size, but the referee looked a bit more like Jerry Francis in his heyday managing QPR. Just the other thing as well, I remember at one stage, Motson mentions Hugo Sanchez at some point. I was like, oh, wow, that takes me back as well. Hugo Sanchez, and he was talking about how Leo Beanhacker, his manager at the time at Real Madrid, had said that he'd scored a spectacular goal for Real Madrid, and, you know, we might as well end the game now. But, yeah, just a couple of little things I noticed. Also, the Panini stickers ad as well on the side of the pitch. You don't see that anymore.
Yeah, the Hugo Sanchez, was he the king of the overhead kick?
He was indeed, yeah.
Another obvious thing from the trending side, which we touched on, was the Irish player has been such a key part of great teams, where we've few, if any, Irish players playing for top six clubs at the moment. And like John Aldridge, I know people do appreciate him, but the credit he deserves for what he did that season, overshadowed obviously by the fact that he missed the penalty in the FA Cup final. But he's coming into a Liverpool side. I know he'd signed midway through the previous season, so he'd been there with Ian Rush. But Ian Rush leaves that summer having scored 40 goals the previous season. Imagine the pressure John Aldridge was going to be under to try and deliver for a team constantly challenging for league titles. He goes and scores in his first 9 league games, every single one of them, and finishes the season with 26 league goals. Like, for an Irish player to do that, and I was doing recently the leading Irish scorers in top flight English football, and like Aldridge is well up there. I think he had 88, but really he only played 4 seasons, because when Rush came back, they were in and out, and he struggled to keep his place in the team all the time. But I just think Aldridge, maybe because his spell at Liverpool was quite short, maybe doesn't quite get the level of credit. Like, for an Irish player to deliver in such a team in that way, I just think is exceptional.
And if you think about it as well, you know, being from Liverpool, he would have wanted to achieve the great things as a local lad. So sometimes the pressure of that can actually be a burden, but he embraced an unbelievable season. Another thing you mentioned earlier about the back pass, I thought when I sat down to watch the game, I thought, you know, the back pass is going to be used a lot, but it really wasn't. And because you think back to, say, the 1990 World Cup, the end of our game against the Dutch, it's ridiculous how much you just roll it out, kick it back, roll it out, kick it back. But there was really none of that with the back pass rule, even an option in that game. And then again, would you want to give the ball to Bruce Grobbelaar at times? I think one of his first bits of distribution in the game, he gives the ball away.
He gave it to Stuart Pearce. But just on the Aldridge thing as well, Nathan, I was actually watching it feeling a little bit frustrated as an Irish fan, because the finishes, especially his first finish, was just sublime. Mm. And I'm just thinking, how did he only score 19 goals for us? Well, we all know why he only scored 19 goals for us. But I just think watching Aldridge in his pomp playing for Liverpool, it's a little bit frustrating as an Irish fan.
Even watching Houghton and knowing what Whelan could do as well. Obviously, we all know the history and the success that Big Jack had. It's only when you watch the players, I think, back at their club level and you see what they were capable of. And obviously, it's a totally different scenario. Liverpool are one of the greatest club sides of all time. But geez, they could have played some real quality football. In terms of the most jarring thing from the game?
I had a couple noted there, actually. The fact there was no co-commentator, I thought was a bit odd. You know, nowadays it's, God, you'd even have maybe 2 or 3 co-commentators on some stations.
Proper order, Steve-O. More time for the commentator. Yeah. That's who the people really want to hear from.
The other thing as well was no clock and score on the TV screen. And you're kind of going, and I noticed that Motson, every kind of 5 to 10 minutes, he'd give a score update and a time update as well. And the other thing, there was very few, like, now the whole thing about watching a Premier League game, any game in any league, the whole part of the drama of watching a football game now is seeing what the manager is doing on the touchline. And I was like, I was dying to get a look at Cluffy, Brian Clough, during the match, because there was even a stage at one point during the match when the cop started singing, Cluffy, Cluffy, what's the score? And I was like, I really wanted to see a cutaway of Brian Clough. Now, there was a couple of Kenny Dalglish towards the end, but I just thought, wow, you know, we're so used to it nowadays, seeing like Pep Guardiola, Jurgen Klopp marching up and down the sideline. I just thought it was a bit odd that we couldn't see that during this game.
Yeah, funnily enough, that is exactly what I have as well as my most jarring, because I was even trying to look back to see was Clough at the game, because you would have thought like, he was such a totemic figure and like that you would want to see his animation on the sideline. Even the couple of clips you saw of Kenny Dalglish I thought were interesting, because he was far more animated than I remember Kenny Dalglish being. He was far more emotional. Like you could see how angry he was getting, these roaring abuse at the players. But I would have thought, as you say, the way, maybe it's the way the conversation around football has changed completely, that it's as much the off the field as the on the field and the drama of the managers, that there was little or no talk about Dalglish and Clough even during the game. Like this wasn't set up as, you know, these two legendary managers coming head to head. It was not, just let the players get on it. It was, yeah, totally in contrast to what we see now.
You can blame Jose Mourinho for that. I think as well, at one stage, Kenny Dalglish is in the dugout and Copper walks by him and he always gives him a look as if to say, what are you doing? You're getting in my way. Just something, something I noticed where obviously because of the way the dugout is, it's a little bit down on the ground. So a Copper walking across you or anyone walking across you is going to have an impact on your view as well. I don't remember yellow cards being handed out. There was very few free kicks, and that's not like nothing to do with the fact that people say, oh, you know, men were tougher back then. And it was just the fact that two teams wanted to play football. There were two teams that played football in the right way. As you said earlier on, Stephen, the average age of the Forest team was 22. So, you know, Brian Clough was trying to develop them and get them to play a certain way. Obviously, Liverpool were all about pass and move. So there was very few fouls in the game.
Mm. The other thing as well, actually, it might be a little bit obvious, but player physiques back then, when you look at players nowadays, like that was something that really struck me as well, is that like even Jan Molby came on in the second half, I was thinking there is no way he would get near a second division, or sorry, a League Two team nowadays, never mind playing in the top flight.
Ready for Euro 88 he was, by the way. The Danish manager was there to look at him.
Yeah.
And another thing that stands out when you're looking back at that era is how brilliant Liverpool were in the transfer market. And I know it's well known about what they did in the summer of 87 when they buy Houghton, Barnes and Beardsley, and like they get Houghton for or Barnes for 900 grand. But they just signed John Aldridge a few months before that as well. Like they got it right. They sold Ian Rush and they brought in three outstanding players that brought them the championship and should have probably brought them to double. Like the impact those players all had coming into his side, we're talking about the pressure on Aldridge. Like for those three players coming in, a couple of them from lower league teams to settle in and suddenly become some of the best players in the world. Maybe again, it's the power of Dalglish or just the brilliance of the recruitment system.
Can I just say, just on the, it's to go back to Ray Houghton, I actually thought he had a pretty poor match.
Oh.
I thought... He gave if you watch it back, he gave the ball away about eight or nine times, about four or five times in the first half and a couple in the second half. And when he went off, I actually wasn't surprised. I thought he looked a little bit kind of disappointed. Like, I do get your point where he was, you know, and listen, I'm not knocking Ray out. And
no, you are.
He was a brilliant player. For
it's exactly what
but
you're
look,
doing.
What you're saying about signing someone like him and the other players, but like he was crucial to Liverpool's success, partly crucial. But I just thought that particular match, if you watch it back, giving away possession the amount of times that he did, I thought was a little bit, yeah, it wasn't great.
We are tight enough on time, so let's rattle through the last few segments. Sliding doors, Phil?
I wonder, given how impressive this performance was and Liverpool wrapped up the league, what impact it had on their performance in the FA Cup final?
Mm.
You know, going for the double, obviously they were going to be favourites. But when you watch that game, you think, how could anyone beat them? How could anyone beat this Liverpool team? And then Wimbledon obviously pulled off the shock in the cup final. Now, things didn't go right for Liverpool that day. They had a goal disallowed. They obviously had the missed penalty. They conceded from a set piece. The fine margins. But I just wonder, was there an overconfidence then going into the cup final, because they were just brushing everyone aside, and that performance 5-0, they must have felt on top of the world after that.
Yeah, well, they were the most overwhelming favourites you could be, certainly at the time, for an FA Cup final. Stephen, for you?
Well, there's a couple of ones. Just on Forrest, I wondered if Forrest ever really recover after that, because, you know, it was a bit of a slow slide for them, really, wasn't it, down to relegation over the next few seasons. And I think they finished eighth the following season. They never really kind of got back to, you know, the great heights that Brian Clough took them to in the 80s. The other thing I was wondering, is, I think somebody mentioned it in one of the replies to me on Twitter, was just that Liverpool team would have gone into the European Cup the following year in a normal year. We all know they were serving that European ban at the time, as all English clubs were. But imagine that Liverpool team going up against that great AC Milan team of the late 80s. Like, we were robbed of what could have been a couple of great European years. I think PSV Eindhoven won the European Cup in that particular season. Great team. They had Ronald Koeman, Wim Kieft, players like that. But you would just wonder, what would that Liverpool team have done if they'd come up against AC Milan over the next couple of seasons in the European Cup?
Yeah, that was my sliding doors moment as well, that if Liverpool had been playing in Europe, we might look at this team differently. Greatest league performance maybe they ever put in up until maybe recent times. But when you judge Liverpool sides and their greatness from the 80s, it's all around the European Cup. And actually, with the exception maybe of Hansen and Barnes, probably none of these players get into their greatest all-time 11 because they didn't do it in the European Cup, because they weren't able to. So, yeah, you would wonder just how they would have got on. Like, imagine a European Cup final between Liverpool and AC Milan. In terms of reaction, well, the reaction, the one standout piece that everyone remembers is the Tom Finney comment, who said it was the finest exhibition I've seen the whole time playing and watching football. You wouldn't see it better than anywhere, not even in Brazil.
Actually, if people haven't watched it, they should go back and watch, because the Tom Finney clip comes on at the very end, and it's actually a lovely moment just to see Tom Finney talking about the game like that. Also, John Aldridge's famous quote, which I thought was a little bit, you know, maybe a little bit overcritical of Nottingham Forest, because they weren't absolutely terrible. Liverpool were brilliant, but that was the famous John Aldridge quote. He said, "It was the most perfect performance you were likely to see. We battered them. They were lucky to get nil, to be honest."
The Forest chairman, even going back to what you said about Europe, Maurice Raworth said, "No team in Europe would have stood a chance tonight," is what he said about Liverpool's performance that night.
Yeah, definitely a fair point. Just on the reaction thing as well, was it interesting to see all the fans running onto the pitch GAA style?
Yeah, and not getting battered for it. So in terms of whether this is overrated or underrated, well, I guess if you're going by Tom Finney's description of it, it's going to be hard to live up to the finest exhibition I've seen the whole time. But watching it back, 32 years later as it is, Steve-O, does it stand the test of time?
Well, far be it from me to go against a knight from the realm like Tom Finney, but I don't know, how do you judge a classic match? You know, do you want to see two teams playing brilliantly in a tight game, or is it all about just one team playing fantastically well? I didn't think Liverpool were 10 out of 10 perfect, to be honest. I
9 out of 10 and Ray Houghton is what you're saying.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe, look, you know what, as a match, I'll put it into context here, right? When I was going to, I did a Liverpool match earlier on the season for us, and I was listening to one of the Liverpool podcasts, and there was a diehard fan speaking on it, talking about the recent Leicester City game that they just played this season in the Premier League. Now, he was saying that the Leicester performance was the best thing he'd seen Liverpool, best game he'd seen Liverpool play since that Forest 5-0. Now, when you put those two matches side by side, I'd probably go for the Leicester City performance. I thought, like, you know, unbelievable. So it's interesting, I think, to measure those two performances maybe beside each other. Different eras, different teams, so be it. But I would just say, just maybe slightly overrated. Oof. Just slightly.
Phil?
Yeah, no, I can see where Stephen's coming from, because I think there is moments in the game, especially that spell after they get the second goal, or even before they get the second goal, up until halftime, Liverpool are in just... they're playing quality football. There's no stopping them. And then there is little lulls. But that's kind of what the Liverpool team of now does, where they take the sting out of games and then they ramp it up and then they look irresistible and unbeatable and untouchable. So I can see where, like, when you turn on the game, what are you expecting? It's very hard to put in a full 90-minute total football performance. So, you know, I don't think it's overrated. I wouldn't say it's underrated. I'm going to just kind of sit on the fence in this one and just urge people maybe to go out and have a look at it themselves and see what they think of it.
Yeah, I think it was right up there in terms of performances, considering it's 22 years ago, say, I think it more than matches the style of football that we see now. And, all right, it's around the time of Jack's Army and we were brought up in a diet of pretty shocking long ball football at times. And there was brilliant football being played around Europe, certainly what AC Milan were starting to do. And I think what Liverpool showed that day was they were more than a match for that, that their style of football was as good as any team. Even compared to the early 80s, like, it's only 7 years, what, 6 years on from Liverpool winning the European Cup in 1981. Like, it feels like a totally different generation in terms of styles of football and the quality on show. Like, this felt like modern football. It felt like that could have been a team in the Premier League if the footage wasn't quite as grainy. So, and I know what you're saying about you want two great teams, and maybe like the Liverpool 4, Manchester City 3 from a couple of years ago, where you have two teams right at the peak of their powers going at it. Maybe Forrest had that in them, but Liverpool were just so good, they couldn't get it out of them. So, yeah, I think, like, I loved watching it back from a purely nostalgic point of view, and, yeah, it was brilliant. We are pretty much out of time, lads. Thank you. We shall do it all again.
The one thing I'd say just to people quickly, Nathan, is that, as I said to you guys just off air there, is that because we're all really starved of football at the moment, it's a great thing to do, to go back and watch a classic game that you haven't seen can't even remember in full, because it's like watching a new game, and it definitely does help with the loss of football that we're all suffering at the moment.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power, the greatest football partnership since Jeff and Heskey.
You're very welcome back to Thursday's football show. Nathan Murphy with you. You've just been listening to the Classic Game Club. Myself, Stephen Doyle and Philip Egan. Going back in time to April 1988, Liverpool 5, Nottingham Forest 0. It's all up on YouTube. You should go and have a watch back. It was a stunning performance from Liverpool. Lots of reaction to that. We'll get to it. But I'm delighted to be joined by the man who opened the scoring that night and very much a key part of that Liverpool title winning side, Ray Houghton. Good evening.
Good evening to you.
How are you keeping?
Yeah, very well. Thank you. Yeah, stuck indoors like everyone else. Just keeping yourself nice and safe and healthy at the moment, Nathan.
Yeah. The right thing to do, I think, at the moment. Not much else to be doing. Do you go back in time when you have these weeks and possibly months to yourself and go on YouTube and watch the great Liverpool performances?
No, I don't. One for looking back at modern performances, to be honest. I did have a message today, though, saying it is 34 years to the day since I made my debut for the Republic of Ireland against Wales. So that's a monumental moment for me, yeah. A moment in my footballing career that changed for the good.
Yeah, we'll talk about Liverpool then, since it is that anniversary. Yeah. What are your main memories of that day against Wales?
Not good, we lost. Yeah, but it was, you know, funny enough, someone sent me to the team. Mick McCarthy was subbed that day. I think I was trying to work out the side because we had the likes of Dave Langan, John Anderson, I think David O'Leary played. I was looking through and I couldn't get the system that we were playing. Liam Brady was captain. Ronnie Whelan played. I think Jim Beglin was involved. Up front, Michael Robinson, John Aldridge. So it was really strange to try and work out the permutations and who was playing where. But you know, it certainly was a day for me that I'll never forget. As I say, coming from Oxford, having played there, you know, it was the next step in my footballing career, if you like, playing international football. And, you know, what happened after that is memorable for me, you know.
So we'll get on to the Liverpool conversation, Ray, then in a moment, because obviously, listen, it is a momentous anniversary if it is 24 years on. Your memories of that day, that was obviously Jack Charlton's first game in charge of the Republic of Ireland. Like, did you know much about Jack coming in and the type of personality he was?
Not at all, to be honest with you, Nathan. You've got to remember, it was Jack's first game as manager. He was in the process of really just having a look at all the players. You know, that was why he brought in a relatively large squad as such. And he just wanted to have a look at everyone and, you know, the players that you'd be looking for the future and who was the ones that he thought was going to be good enough to play in the style and the system that he wanted.
Ian Rush scored the only goal that day. Yourself and John Aldridge went on and made your debuts, and obviously all three of you went on to play together and enjoy enormous success. Just in terms of the move, because you mentioned you were playing for Oxford at the time, the move that came then a year later to Liverpool. At that stage, would playing international football have been a factor in you getting that move?
Oh, undoubtedly. There's no question about it. I'm sure there was clubs who'd been looking at me while I was at Oxford, because we were reasonably successful for a very small club. You know, that season we won the League Cup, we kept ourselves in the top division. So we played some decent football, and there was, you know, scouts coming along. We watched John and myself, amongst others, at the club. But there's no doubt, you know, getting international football, being involved for, what, 18 months or so before I made my move to Liverpool, certainly helped, because it builds up your confidence. Mm. You get great belief playing international football, play with top players. I mean, actually, I was playing with Paul McGrath, Ronnie Whelan, Liam Brady. Liam, as I say, is one of my all-time favourite players for Ireland, and I think he was absolutely sensational. So to come in and play at that stage with that calibre of player was absolutely brilliant, and there's no question that it improved me as a player over the coming months, years, before I got my move to Liverpool.
That performance against Nottingham Forest was in some way seen as the peak of that side, and three of the crucial players were yourself, Peter Beardsley and John Barnes, all of whom came in together in the summer of 1987. John Aldridge had arrived just a few months beforehand. Like, Liverpool's recruitment at that stage was just off the charts. To bring three players into an exceptional team already, and like, you got to hit the ground running. And for every single one of them, John Barnes goes on to become Footballer of the Year that year. Like, did you get the sense the second you started pre-season training that this was going to be something special?
Well, as it happens, Nathan, I didn't come in until the October. I mean, I was the last of the four. John came in the January. He left Oxford in January because Ian Rush was on the way out of Liverpool. That was his last season. And then Liverpool obviously had to try and bring players in to compensate for Ian's move. John Barnes talked about this regular. When he came from Watford to Liverpool, he believed he was going to be playing as a centre-forward. Hmm. He didn't think he was going to be playing as a left-winger, because at that time, I don't think they brought Peter in. Peter had came in, I think, a week or so after John, and obviously he was going to play in the centre-forward role. Then John's asking the question, well, where am I going to be playing? On the left wing, and that's where Kenny said, yeah, I think that's where you'll be playing. And he was saying, well, the way that Liverpool have played over the years, you don't really play with out-and-out wingers, you know, so how do you see me fitting into the team? Well, let me tell you, seamlessly, the way that John got into the Liverpool team straight away, his performance level from day one was off the charts, as good as anyone I've seen in a long time at Liverpool. And I came in the October, and it was very easy. You know, when you're coming into a club, the players that Liverpool had was so comfortable, because everyone was as good as you, if not better, in possession of the ball. So you always had options. You always had players who you could give the ball to. They started the season very well. I think we went on that season to go, 29 games unbeaten? Yeah. I think the 30th game was against Everton, which I still think is a Liverpool record. I mean, even this season, which has been absolutely outstanding, they didn't go 29 games unbeaten from, you know, the first game of the season till when they had the first loss away against Watford. That's how long we went. And we lost to our great rivals, Everton 1-0. I think it was Wayne Clark that got the only goal of the game, but it was a sensational side to play in. And it's the only time, Nathan, I can tell you, in my 20 years as a professional, there was three seasons at Liverpool where you were going into games and it wasn't how many you were, if you were going to win, it was how many you were going to win by.
Right.
And that wasn't arrogance, that's just how good they were.
How did you get that balance right, though? Because it could easily turn into arrogance and you end up getting caught out. Like, how did you make sure actually there was that relentless nature there to keep it going?
It was the coaching staff, the manager. You know, they never allowed you to, you know, sit back on anything that you'd done. They were always pushing you. They were always trying to get the best out of you. They were always challenging, whether that would be in training, whether it would be in matches. You know, they were always looking for even better, one game to the next. Yeah, you done that last week, but this week you've got to be even better. Mm. And you've got to be even better. I mean, it was even like at the end of the season, you know, when I got my medal, a cardboard box came into the changing room and Bronnie Moran would just throw the medals around. Did you play enough games yet? There you go. Well done. Go home and put it in your trophy cabinet. Forget about it because it's meaningless for the start of next season. That was their attitude. Their attitude was all about, you know, it was all about the next game.
Yeah.
Right, we need to win the next one. They're always pushing you. They're always putting you under pressure to be even better game after game after game. It was relentless. But it was in a good way. You know, it was always for your benefit. You know, they always wanted you improves a player, improves a team. And that's why we got the best results.
A couple of things sort of stood out watching it back. Firstly is it didn't feel that different to modern football and the great modern teams, the way that Liverpool side played. In comparison to, I think, if you watch back, say, football around 80, 81, like that does feel like a different generation. Like Liverpool, the way they got the ball down, the way they tried to press high and win second balls and not give the opposition a second. And obviously there was like Steve Nicol bombing up the right-hand side the way Trent Alexander-Arnold would do now. And the other thing that stood out, I thought, was the physique of some of the players. That, like, John Barnes looked like a modern-day footballer. Like, he was agile, he was strong in all the right places, he could do a little bit of everything. Like, you mentioned him there and just how good he was. Like,
yeah.
I think people remember the goal against Brazil, remember he got into that Premier League era. Like, it's hard to compare generations, but, like, was Barnes, of his time, the best player of his generation?
Well, he certainly was the best player at Liverpool when I was there. That goes without saying. His first three seasons, he was absolutely unplayable, absolutely dynamic. You know, he could do everything. You just, you know, talked about his upper body strength, how quick he was over the ground. Not only was he a goal maker, he was also a goal taker. Have a look at his record as far as scoring goals were concerned. You know, and it didn't matter. He was good in the air, free kicks. And remember, you know, I don't like comparing generations, yeah. You know, to the 80s to of today. Because one thing that we had back then that was not today, and I'm grateful for it, there's no fear factor. You know, back then, you were going to, you know, when you were playing, you were fearful of who you were playing against and what they might do to you as far as the challenge was concerned.
Yeah.
Because they weren't just going to let you waltz around them. That wasn't going to be. They weren't just going to let you have the ball and what do you want to do with it? We'll just stand off of you. No, there was nothing like that. There was the fear factor of getting hurt, which isn't around today. And I'm pleased to say it's not around today. But players of today, if they had to play back then and when that was really prominent,
yeah.
I just wonder how they would have got on with it, because it would have been much, much different. But we had, you know, Liverpool played a different way when John came in and Peter Beardsley, in many respects. They went away from just a passing team to players that could actually go three and beat three or four players. They didn't always have that in their starting 11. They were ruthless in other ways, but there was an extra dimension with John and Peter coming in,
yeah.
And the way that they played. And obviously that had a major effect on, you know, the results that we got.
And just on John Aldridge then, because just having John obviously share so much history for club and country, like his performance that season, he scored twice in that match. I think he scored five in that little trilogy against Nottingham Forest, 26 league goals, scored in his first 9 matches. Like, coming in, and I know he was there for a while with Rush, but Rush had scored 40 goals the previous season. Like, the pressure that must have been on his shoulders at the start of that year to deliver as Liverpool's new main man up front, and the way he responded was pretty exceptional.
Yeah, it really was. But, I mean, John will probably tell you, I mean, I was with him at Oxford, and yet he fight for his chances. There wasn't as many, you know, when you were playing in games, because we weren't as good as the opposition in the majority of the times. So chances were at a premium. When he was at Liverpool, I mean, he was getting chances from everywhere. I mean, his job, he'll tell you, was to hold the ball up, lay it out wide or off to one of the midfield players, and then make his way into the box. Because he knew between Peter, myself, Steve McMahon, Ronnie Whelan, Stevie Nicol, who you mentioned, you know, and the other players of the team, that they were going to create chances for him. They were going to get the ball in the box, and more often than not, the quality that was going into the box was of a very high standard. So he was always going to get chances. So yeah. John absolutely thrived on it. And if you look at John's record, wherever he was, Newport, Oxford, you know, when he went over to Real Sociedad, when he came back to Tranmere, his time at Liverpool, have a look at his goal-scoring record. It is up there with anyone. Anyone that's played the game, John's up there. He's a phenomenal goal scorer. He was with his hometown club, Liverpool, and he had a sensational time. You know, just look at his stats, his record. It's absolutely phenomenal.
We are tight in time. Two very quick points to wrap up on. I thought you played well in that 5-0. You got your goal, which you took very nicely, and I thought you contributed to the all-round performance. Stephen Doyle, who was on with me when we were reviewing it, said, you know, I didn't think Ray played that well.
Well, yeah, I don't know what planet he was on, because, I did play very well that game, as all of us did. You know, we all had a contribution to it, and I think Tom Finney said it was one of the best all-round displays from a football side. Yeah. In a match. And don't forget, on the Saturday we played at Nottingham Forest in the semi-final of the FA Cup. On the Sunday we went down to London because it was the Player of the Year, which John Barnes won, and numerous players were in the team of the season. And we didn't get back till Monday lunchtime. where we had to stay overnight.
Having had a good night.
And we went and played the next day and played like that.
Wow. Yeah, I've thrown Stephen under the bus there, I've got to admit. That was my last question. Tom Finney's quote, which was you repeated there and is well known. Like, was he right? In your time at Liverpool, was that the one performance that stands out above all others?
Yeah, I mean, we played exceptional football that night. And listen, in Nottingham Forest, obviously, they were hurting after the defeat on Saturday in an FA Cup semi-final. So I thought they would be coming out and they would be a bit more, you know, getting in amongst us. They couldn't get near us. You know, the football that we played, the movement that we had, the goals that we scored, every time we went forward, it looked like we were going to score a goal. I mean, if you look back in the 90 minutes and see the chances that were created and the saves that the goalkeeper made and the crossbar that was hit or the post that was hit, it was just phenomenal. It was just one of them nights where everything clicked. Everything we did resulted in opportunities, and I'm afraid to say that Nottingham Forest were just nowhere near the level required that night. And I don't think anyone would have been, to be honest. Such was the performance level of everyone.
Ray, great stuff. Thanks as always for taking the call. Mind yourself.
Thank you. And to you, Nathan.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. The greatest football partnership since Jeff and Heskey.